Provincial officials did from time to time move against individuals or move against communities, usually in circumstances about which were ill-informed. Although on occasion, one or another of the Christians killed in these periodic roundups would have a life written or would have an account of his or her death written. Now, these passions of the martyrs were undoubtedly drawn up on the model of the passions of Christ in the Gospels. In other words, we don't get a biography of the saint's whole life. We get an account of the last moments of the holy person's death, the last moments of life, that is to say, the point when the person is dead, dies, and is born to new life in heaven. So, for example, a saint's day is the day the saint died, not the day the saint was born. Well, anyway, these are the individuals whom the Christian tradition came to call martyrs. Now, it's important to say here, the Greek verb martyrein means to witness, not to die. A martyr is somebody who gives witness to something, possibly by dying, possibly in other ways. In the years 250-251, the Emperor Decius undertook for the first time a systematic persecution of Christians throughout the Roman Empire, a really massive attempt to go after them. It was brief, it was short-lived, and suffice it to say, it failed. And then there was some sporadic persecution of Christianity again over a period of time until the Emperor Diocletian undertook the great persecution from 303 until 306. He retired in 305. The persecution actually carried on for a little while after he himself stepped down from the imperial office. Now, this persecution was part of his overall sort of ideological realignment. It was part of his grand reform process to sort of get the Roman state on secure footing. He seems to have felt that Christians were, in various ways, a threat to his state and to its stability. Now, Diocletian was pretty clever, not surprisingly, given the other kinds of things we've said about him, in going after Christians. He attacked the clergy. He attacked assemblies. He gathered up and burned Christian books. He required people to appear publicly in temples to make a brief act of sort of sacrifice, put a bit of incense on a brazier before a statue of one or another of the pagan gods, for example. He encouraged people to denounce Christians if your neighbor or someone you knew or even a member of your family were a Christian. Diocletian encouraged you to denounce that person. Diocletian retired, passed from the scene, is followed, as we saw, a couple of lectures back by Constantine, and things changed pretty sharply. Constantine came from a family. His mother was a devout Catholic. Helena was her name. He seems himself to have had leanings in the direction of the Catholic Church from the time he was a young man, but he doesn't really appear to have converted until he had become, until very much, very, very late in his life, possibly even in the 330s, and he died in 337. But he nevertheless took various steps on behalf of Christianity even earlier. In 313, for example, he issued the Edict of Milan, which granted Christianity toleration in the empire, put it on equal footing with all the other religions of the empire. But then he himself also, for instance, granted massive tax exemptions and fiscal privileges to the church. Tax exemptions and fiscal privileges which churches preserve to this day. He gave massive donations to the church. He gave them, for example, the Lateran Basilica. The Lateran Basilica is still the Cathedral Church of Rome. He built the original Church of St. Peter's and the great Church of St. Paul outside the walls in Rome for the Roman Church. Now, when the emperor, and indeed other members of the imperial family, are acting in this way, it won't surprise you to learn that this brings other people in their train. Other people want to sort of get on the bandwagon. There was a brief pagan revival under the Emperor Julian the Apostate between 361 and 363, but the fact of the matter is that by then, paganism was on, officially at least, its last legs. It was pretty clear that Julian's pagan revival was not going to succeed. Now, Theodosius, whom I've mentioned a couple of times, between 378 and 380, passed a whole series of laws that effectively made Roman Christianity the state religion of the Roman Empire. Let's fast forward just a bit, just a century, to the time of Pope Gelasius at the end of the 5th century. Gelasius had gotten into a theological quarrel with the Emperor Anastasius at Constantinople. We needn't worry ourselves too much about the details of that quarrel right now. Gelasius writes the emperor a letter. It's quite a remarkable letter. He tells the emperor, he first of all draws a distinction in this letter between the auctoritas, the authority of priests, and the potestas, the power of emperors. He says ordinarily these two things are different. They are distinct. They are separate.